With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
From the Apostrophe Podcast Network. One, two,
three. They all come from unknown north. Talent, drive, and a pride worth paying for. But just because they're above the 49 parallel, it doesn't mean we shouldn't celebrate them just as well. So give it up for these Canucks, because our self-promotion sucks. And if they all went away, we sure wouldn't miss them.
Stu.co.
The Canadian Star System.
Hello and welcome back to the Canadian Star System. Not quite the Milky Way, more of a coffee crisp. This is where we speak with some of Canada's most talented people and try to figure out what makes them so good and what makes Canada so bad at celebrating our own. Each episode, our stars not only shine, but also shine their spotlight on another Canadian talent who they know the rest of us should know more about. I'm your host, Steve Patterson, but my friends call me... I'm just kidding. My friends don't call me because I have young children. But I'll tell you who does call me at least once a week to remind me that we're doing this show. And that's my producer and co-host, Diana Francis. Hi, Diana.
Hello, Steve Patterson.
Why do you sound so angry already?
I know. I'm excited to be here today.
Are
as
you?
I always am. I am.
Oh, okay. I don't know. Maybe I caught you distractedly. Now, I'd made a couple of, hopefully you know your Canadian chocolate bars. I made a couple chocolate references there.
I know. Very well done. It's a great sneak peek as to who our guest is today.
I mean, a little bit, but I mean, I think that this chocolate is much, much better. But do you have a go-to chocolate or candy yourself?
I do, Steve. My go-to, it's very Canadian. I love a coffee crisp.
It is.
I legitimately love a coffee crisp. And I'm that weirdo who eats it layer by layer. I don't just bite into it. I like eat the top layer and then eat the next layer and just like kind of trim it down until you're left with that last little wafer. Yum, yum, yum.
Never heard of that in my life. And that's on some sort of psychological evaluation. That is a red flag. So I'm glad that you enjoyed the chocolate part of the chocolate bar. It is a pretty good segue into our guest, although he's much, much more distinguished, certainly, than the coffee crisp, with all due respect to the coffee crisp. You want to just get right into it?
Let's do it.
All right. Our featured guest today has not been a Canadian citizen for very long, but he's made a huge impact in a very short time. He's originally from Syria, where he lived with his family in Damascus until the civil war there forced them to flee to a refugee camp in Lebanon. They were there for 3 years before his perseverance and the kind-heartedness of a Nova Scotia community relocated them to Canada. He immediately began giving back to the community that brought him here and built up the family business that they had left behind in Syria, a chocolate business, but this time with a renewed focus on goodwill and peace, calling the company Peace by Chocolate. Now, he serves on the board of Invest Nova Scotia. He has won Canada's National Newcomer Entrepreneur Award, and he was selected by Google as the National Hero case for 2018. Here he is, Tarek Haddad. Tarek!
Steve, very good to be with you. Thank you so much for having me. Hi, Diana.
Hi.
I think people can probably hear your smile. You have one of the greatest smiles. Every time I've seen you, you are smiling and it is contagious. What makes you so happy all the time?
Well, there's a lot to be happy about, Steve. Like, what? Life is not really worth it if you don't smile. Life is not worth it if you are not happy. And if you don't find your sense of happiness, every one of us has their own sense of happiness. You just have to find it. And to be honest, after what our family and we have been through, you know, we came to Canada and we just feel that we have to take advantage of our lives and really celebrate it in many ways that people just don't see. I'm happy if I go to the shower and find water. I'm happy if I wake up and find electricity. I'm happy if I get out and my car starts in the middle of a blizzard in the winter. I'm happy for everything.
I love your perspective on things. This is a little bit of history. Diana has actually interviewed you before for another project. This is a while back. I was supposed to interview you and I had an injury and I couldn't do the interview and because I had a sore arm. And then I tried to put that in perspective. I'm like, this is a man whose family had to flee war, who got through 3 years in a refugee camp, and I'm not interviewing him because I have a sore arm. So you are just a much better human being than me.
You're great, Steve. You're great.
Oh, well, see, this is what I need every day. Now, within the past year, you've actually gotten your official Canadian citizenship. And you've described that as something that you're very, very proud of. Tell us about this. You're sort of in the honeymoon period of your Canadianism, if I may. What's it like?
Well, being a Canadian is the biggest honor, was the biggest honor of my life, is my biggest honor of my life, will be the biggest honor of my life. You know, Canada was the country that opened the doors for our family when many other countries around the world were closing their borders. When I was in Lebanon and I was so pessimistic about everything that goes on with humanity, at some point I applied to go to the U.S., imagine, with Trump. I was like, just get me to the U.S., even with Trump, at least I would be safe there. And I did not get to the U.S., I did not get to Italy, I did not get to Portugal, I did not get to Turkey even. And Canada was the only country on earth that really said, welcome home and welcome here. So I'm really on my honeymoon, I'm really celebrating, you know, what this country stands for: freedom, human rights, empathy, kindness, compassion, diversity, democracy, all of those things that we really all have to live up to every single day. I know this country is not perfect. I know in the past few weeks and few months, you know, we have discovered that we have a lot of work to do, and this should not have come to a surprise to anyone. But when I came to Canada, I always said that I did not just sign up to Canada's excellence. I also owned its mistakes and failures. So I will do everything I can, hopefully, to leave this country better for our children than I found it. So yes, absolutely. Being in Canada is the biggest honor of my life.
Now, just to be clear, we were your fifth choice. I counted four other countries before us.
I actually applied to everyone at the same time. Canada was Canada was one of the first countries, but they got back to me.
Alphabetically, we were the
That's
top.
Right.
We're number five. It's just been an incredible story for you and your family since you've been here. And it started to spread, certainly, so many people may have heard it. But if we could just get to the Coles Notes, to the very shortened version of the reason you had to flee Syria. We all know that that conflict is happening and has been happening for such a long time. Is there a way to pinpoint why that ever started? Or do you, now that you've moved beyond that, do you not like to think back to those days, to that conflict?
Oh, 100%, yes. I remember the days where, you know, we used to live in peace. I remember the days when I used to walk downtown Damascus without having to worry of a mortar rocket falling on my head. I used to remember all of these beautiful things that we used to do. All my family members were living in one building. So my grandmother was on the first floor. We were on the second floor. My uncles, my aunts. 60 members of my family were in that building. 10 floors. 10 floors, Steve. So every Saturday, we used to have the supper together. And that's what I remember. It just, you know, everything just broke down after the war started in 2012, after the movement of the Arab Spring just ignited people's wills to change. There was a lot to change. There was a lot of reform. But unfortunately, you know, when everything started to almost to start changing, just violence got in the way. You know, the regime started bombing the rebels and the protesters, you know, and we knew that violence will beget violence. kindness beget kindness, violence beget violence, fear and anxiety will beget fear and anxiety. This is the law of life. You know, whatever you give, you get back. It breaks my heart all the time that people don't know a lot about Syria before the war. Like, if you even go to Google, right now, the first thing you would find about Syria is the Syrian war, Syrian crisis, Syrian refugees, Syrian victims. No one knows, you know, about these peaceful memories that we have had in Damascus, the hospitality of the Syrian people, the beauty of the country. You know, that's absolutely one of the most amazing places in the Middle East to live, to work, to start a business, to study. And we were proud Syrians. You know, our family started a chocolate business for a long time there that grew into an empire. So everyone had aspirations in our family. I was on the way to become a physician. So I got into med school. I was doing a training one day when my father's factory was bombed to the ground, was just leveled after an airstrike. So what started in Syria was just people trying to make change and reforms. And then they were faced by a dictatorship, by, you know, a regime that just did not want to change, that did not want to give people rights and freedoms. I was living in Damascus. And I knew that many people outside of Damascus, they didn't have the same privileges I had because I was living in a big city. They didn't have healthcare, they didn't have education, they didn't have the basics of life. So I started connecting to the struggles of the people who were less fortunate in our country. And that's when everyone else started to realize, yes, we need to really dig down into the causes for corruption in the country. We need to know where is the people's money going if they are not building roads, if they're not doing bridges, if they're not building hospitals, if they're not making schools. Where is people's, you know, money going? It's all about that, certainly. But people at the end, you know, are the victims. Civilians were the victims of this. I called it the Third World War.
Absolutely.
That happened in one country when all other countries started to fight in one place.
It's so much heartbreak and turmoil when you think of the situation that is ongoing. And, you know, your family, your large family is able to get out of that area and get into Lebanon comparatively safe, but not a great situation. You know, I saw something you wrote recently on World Refugee Day. People have different thoughts on refugees, but often we think of, you know, there's people that are in a country that have animosity towards refugees for coming into their country, when in fact, I mean, there's no option. They're fleeing from it. They don't want to be. No one wants to be a refugee. And I think that the fact that you have this positivity that you're able to portray, the fact that you're helping people, even as you're getting acclimatized into Canada, is such an amazing story and such an amazing spirit. And you're not alone in it, but you certainly are a figurehead of it now. Since you've come to Canada, you've met the Prime Minister. The Prime Minister has mentioned you by name. You've met several heads of state, and you've been embraced by the little old town of Antigonish, Nova Scotia. What can you tell everyone about Antigonish?
Well, first, you know, if you are ever to be in Nova Scotia, you have to call it Antigonish. So the T does not count.
See?
That's what happens.
Look at
after
this.
Five
that's
years.
How Canadian you are. You're correcting me on how to say a Canadian. I love it.
Lesson number one, Steve.
Antigonish.
You got it. The town is just so perfect. You know, it's just amazing to see the people coming to support refugee families who did not want to leave their homelands, right, Steve? Like, as you mentioned, no one was born to immigrate. No one was born to be a refugee. It's not a life goal. It's not a choice. It's not a decision. It's something we were forced to. And because we were living in our homelands, building these connections, enjoying our lives, that's what we all want in life, right? Like, you want to have a peaceful, happy, safe life with your family, seeing your kids growing up, not really having to leave and live as a refugee, which is a stateless condition. No one wants to have that certificate from UNHCR, the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, telling you you are just a number, like you don't belong anywhere, like you have no identity. You are not Syrian anymore. You cannot be Lebanese because you are there. So who you are, like, you know, everyone would start asking themselves, like, how are we going to survive as human beings? So really giving back the humanitarian aspect of refugees is very important for everyone in the world these days, because there are 60 million plus refugees around the world these days living in horrendous circumstances. No one really is acknowledging their struggles. And imagine also living in a pandemic as refugees. This is triple the suffering. So Antigonish has given us another chance to live, to be honest, and without the the generosity, the kindness of the people there, you know, the randomness of the place itself, like coming from Syria, Damascus, the city of millions of people, to Antigonish.
I love the story that you told me before when we spoke, Tarek, when you found out where you were going and you looked it up and you saw pictures in the summertime. Right. And that's what you showed your family?
That's what I sent to my mom. It's like, yeah. You know, what is it like to be living in Antigonish? So, by the way, I landed in Halifax. That was December 19th, 2015. And I saw this group of Canadians coming from Antigonish to the airport holding flowers and signs with my name in Arabic and English.
Wow.
And someone came to me and was like, "Are you Tarek?" I'm like, "Yes, I'm Tarek, but I'm sure I'm not Tarek you are looking for." And I'm like, "Wow, Tarek, it must be a very famous name in Halifax that everyone's called Tarek. How did these people know me? Like, I don't know anyone of them. No one really introduced me to them." They were like, "Yes, we are sure you're Tarek we are looking for." And then they had, you know, all the information about me. They were like, "Welcome to Nova Scotia." And I'm like, "Wow, this is such an amazing place," because I only knew of Canada, the MTV, Montreal, Toronto, and Vancouver.
Oh, okay.
That's what immigrants know about the new country like Canada. And then when I landed in Halifax, I'm like, "Am I still in Canada?" Like, like, yes, you're just on the other side of the country, on the Atlantic Ocean. And then we had to drive to Antigonish for 2.5 hours from the airport. It was snowy. And then I was in the car with two physicians. And they were all asking me about all, you know, medical questions. And I'm like, "You know, you are in a new country, in the middle of the darkness, the middle of nowhere, driving on the highway. There's nothing except moose and trees. That's what you see." And I'm like, you know, I'm scared to death. I'm in a car where I'm with two physicians taking me to a place I don't know. I'm like, turned to them and I told them, "Doctors, I really need my kidneys." Like, there were two surgeons too. So I arrived in town and just had a lot of fun since then. So the journey really started a few days after I knew that I arrived home, and I started calling Antigonish right after.
This takes it to the next level, because Canadians even know, I mean, there's Canadian friendly, then there's maritime friendly. It is a different level.
Oh, it's extra.
They'll welcome strangers into their home, certainly, but this is another level of having invited you from across the world, taking your family in. I will say that I've gone into Halifax many times and they've never put up signs for me. So thanks a lot, Halifax.
And everybody in Halifax is named Steve.
Yeah. That's true. If I saw a sign that said "Welcome, Steve," I would think it was for me, but it would for sure not be. But you've blazed such a trail. There's probably a lot of Tarek McDonald's out there now since you've arrived. Now, let's talk quickly about the transition. You were in medical school, you've done your medical training, and that was the course that your life was taking you on. And then that course got interrupted, changed by the entire situation in Syria. But when you came to Canada, you still were interested in pursuing medicine. Is that correct? And it was difficult to transfer things here? Yeah. Is that what happened?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I came to Canada on the passion of becoming a physician.
Right.
That's why I applied to come to Canada. That's why I applied to get my family out of the Middle East in the first place, is because, you know, I wanted to continue my studies. And then when I landed in Canada, I was faced with the reality that if you have credentials from overseas, they're not going to be recognized. You have to go do undergraduate degree and then apply and then do the MCAT and then all of these complexities. And some schools even asked me to do high school again. I'm like, for God's sake, I arrived here and I finished a lot of time in med school. Why do I have to go back? Like, we as a country these days, we are losing a lot of potential. Mm-hmm. We are losing a lot, because imagine all of those people and how much of contribution would have been to the country during the pandemic either.
Yes.
Like, everyone now is just like, you know, going around in their lives, finding a job anywhere. It's not making them less of people for sure, but also they have credentials and they have skills. For example, when I came here, I called a friend in Ontario and he was like, "Tarek, do you know that if you have a heart attack in Toronto, it's safer to be with a cab driver rather than being in an emergency room at the hospital?" I'm like, "Why?" He was, "Because 70% of cab drivers in Toronto are immigrant physicians who cannot practice, who cannot go back to practice and become physicians, because that's the system. That's how things run in this country." I was optimistic that I could get through it. And I'm sure with persistence, maybe I would have been able to, but then I didn't have time. I wanted to move on with something else until things get better in our lives. And that's when I decided just to shift gears and just support my family and restart everything.
It's been a pretty amazing shift of gears, but you bring up a great point. that, you know, it's sort of a joke that we like to talk about. It's, oh, you know, people come over here and they can't get the jobs that they have. But it's not a joke. And you're absolutely right. During the pandemic, people that have medical training should be recognized for their medical training. The anatomy, I believe, of all humans is the same. Maybe I'm wrong there.
No, you are not. We all have the same amount of blood. We all have the same number of bones. We all have the same tissues. So nothing really is different. It's all the same.
I have a small tail, but that's I think that's an anomaly. That's not something that's normal.
It doesn't count, yeah.
Now, let's talk about where chocolate comes into all this, because we haven't really spoken about that yet. But your father, similar to you, because he was a civil engineer and then decided this isn't my passion anymore. I'm changing course. I see the happiness that chocolate brings to people. I want to help make that. And all of a sudden, he starts a small chocolate manufacturer, not even a manufacturer, starts to make chocolate in the kitchen at your home in Damascus. It grows into, I think, the second biggest chocolate manufacturer in all of the Middle East. And this business is thriving. And then you have to flee and start from scratch here in Canada. And he does the exact same thing. He starts making chocolate in the kitchen and then it just balloons so quickly. Can you talk about that?
Absolutely. Well, you know, if you would ask me that life would be so repetitive, I would say, no, this is so crazy. Like, you know, the same thing my father did 30 years ago. We had to do it in Indonesia. The only thing that's different is starting a business in Syria took my father almost 10 years even to register the business. He opened two shops downtown Damascus and on the way to the airport, and that was it in the beginning of his stage. And really, he was able to register business, start expanding and exporting. We did that in Canada in 6 months.
Wow.
So, you know, that's the difference. That's the difference of really doing business here versus doing business in the Middle East.
Is that because there's less red tape, or like why is that, that you can do it so much quicker here?
Well, in Syria, you know, it takes you a lot of time to even do trademark to your name, to even register and apply and do an application for your business number. To get a business number in Syria, it takes you forever. In addition to all the complexities of, you know, distribution and et cetera, and, you know, financial capital, securing your customer base and all of that. So the difference was certainly in the system itself, in the system of doing business. And I think that we have such a great system for entrepreneurs in this country that supports you to go from point A to point B wherever you want, whenever you are ready. And there is a lot of awareness about, you know, do you want a resource? Do you want support? Do you want an advisor? Do you want a grant? Do you want a loan? All of that was not available at that time, and it's still not. You know, the country, unfortunately, Syria is going backwards now after the war. And that's really what makes Canada is just so great for entrepreneurs. And that's why we see people just coming here from all over the world to start a business. While so many Canadians are not aware of the reality that, you know, it's not that complicated, right? You just have to get out of your comfort zone and start doing things. And that's why I think what also helped us is that we are making chocolate, which is universal.
Right away, red tape melts away with chocolate.
I mean, it's not to be discounted. By the way, have you ever tried a coffee crisp that Diana was talking about before? Have you ever tried one of those?
Don't ask me what do
no,
I think.
No, I won't. Okay, I mean, great. Your dad is a master chocolatier. To put a coffee crisp, I don't even know what the equivalent would be. Hey, do you like bananas? Try just the peel.
Oh, yes.
Now, I will say this. I want to give a regional shout out to Nova Scotia, because you talk about, you know, Canada being a better system to get through. But in Nova Scotia and in Antigonish, the community rallied behind you right 100%. From the get-go. I mean, you started in a small market and all of a sudden this shop was being built by tradespeople. So your family, while they were being helped, you know, you immediately identified, we want to give back, started this business, started employing people, not just in the chocolate factory, but in the trades. I think it's incredible that you were able to do this so quickly and to always, even though you're starting from scratch, to be able to give back to the community at every step of the way. Was that just always something that was important to you, or was that something that came into your experience from moving to Canada?
Absolutely. You know, all the credit goes to the people of Antigonish. All the credit goes to Safe Syria Antigonish Families Embrace that brought our family here. All the credit goes to Nova Scotia. We are just a result. Our family is just a result of this kindness. We are not the cause. We are the result. And they are the reason. So I truly believe that we are lucky to be here. And giving back was something I started you know, talking about more after the business started. Because in business, you hear a lot about ROI, right? You hear a lot about return on investment, but no one talks about ROK, return on kindness. And I really started talking more about that and thinking about it. How can we do a business in a socially responsible manner? How can we change the lives of others like others changed our lives? How can we give back to the country, to the province, to the town that has given us so much, which is peace? Peace for me started to be that value that comes from everywhere and takes us everywhere. Without it, we will never be able to restart a business. We'll never be able to go to school, never be able to have kids. We'll never be able to raise family. I would not be able to record this interview with you without living in a peaceful place. How am I supposed to sit down knowing that I'm not going to get killed or bombarded or just blown away if I'm, you know, not knowing that I'm living in peace? And that's really the biggest value in this country that we started thinking about. So yes, giving back was the main value in the business, and started with the wildfires in Fort McMurray in 2016.
Right.
That's when we started donating to the organizations that means a lot to us, Canadian relief efforts to help other Canadians on the other side of the country. Because we said we knew how does it feel to have to flee your home after a wildfire, you know, after a bombing. And we don't want Canadians to have that feeling, because it's so bad. It's ugly. It's an ugly feeling. And that's really when everything started with the community. So now our work expands to over 5 major partnerships with our Peace on Earth Society, but also we have around 10 to 15 more partnerships on the go during the year.
And again, it's truly astounding to me that you would be able to reach out across the country, as you said, to Fort McMurray from Antigonish. You're still establishing yourself, at your family, still establishing yourself, but you're seeing, no, there's people that need our help on the other side of this country because people reached out to us on the other side of the world. It really is contagious, isn't it, that you are helping out in this way?
The law of reciprocity, you know, whatever you give, you will get back. Canada gave us a lot of this kindness, and we're just returning it. We're not reinventing something new. Like, this is the basic value in this country, right? Like, when you go anywhere, you're so welcome. I've traveled to almost every major town and city before the pandemic, and I was lucky. I was really lucky because I got to see how this country is performing, how this country really is just welcoming people from all over the world, not only from Syria, and how is, you know, history supporting these new waves of organizations coming together with communities to bring people and support them to restart their lives. It's not easy. You know, everyone comes here like a newborn baby. I barely spoke few words of English when I arrived in Canada. My father is still learning the language. All of the kids in the family now, they come and they laugh at us because we don't speak proper English. You know, that's what the kids do. Immigrant kids, they always come and laugh at their parents and their older siblings because they can't speak English properly. But it's been really, really exciting for us to run a business in a different way. And, you know, when life gives you another chance to restart something, just do it right.
You make it seem so easy, so simple, so matter of fact. I think it's just from your viewpoint. I read a quote from you saying, we knew if we faced trouble that we could sit down and complain about it, or we could dig down and find solutions, which is, I mean, that's a real interesting way to say we knew if we faced trouble. You've faced trouble. You've definitely faced trouble, and you've come through it on the other side. Now, you said at the beginning, we talked about, you know, you accept Canada and all of Canada, all of the history, and we tend to whitewash a lot of the history in Canada. That has come out recently with residential school atrocities and a genocide in Canadian history. What does your experience tell you about that Canadian experience that, you know, it's not as great as we set it out there, but what do we do to address that?
Well, when I came to Canada, I knew that I have a lot of work to do to reestablish our lives, but then no one really told me, you know, the real stories of history about residential schools, about the struggles of Indigenous people. And I was disappointed, to be honest. Yeah. That was the mark in history in Canadian lives that we have all to know. We all have to pay a price for that shared history, you know, whether we are newcomers or whether we are Canadians born here or born away. I know firsthand what does it feel like, you know, to have somebody come and just bomb your house or kill your family and just burn it and then ask you to leave. You know, I know that firsthand. I tried that. And this is the last thing that I want anyone else on this planet, whether they are my friends or my enemies, not even my enemies, not even my enemies. I want them to try that feeling. So that's why in the company, if you go a little bit in history, in 2016, when we started thinking, how can we express our gratitude that we are here on an indigenous land? We are here on Mi'kma'ki, the land that we call home. That's why the first chocolate bar we created was called Wanta'udi, which means peace in Mi'kmaq. And then we established a partnership called Nitap, which means a buddy or friend in Mi'kmaq as well. So proceeds of all of those products go to indigenous communities, Pukenkik near Antigonish, and many other indigenous communities across Canada. That's how I started connecting the dots, to be honest, just like thinking, how can I make sense of all of this? How can I make sure that I'm using my voice and our platform as a business leaders in the province right now to make sure people connect to indigenous people across the country, which is not easy, which is, you know, I know it's been buried for a very long time, you know, the stories of residential schools, the inequality, you know, the unemployment rate in indigenous reserves, all the other struggles for residential school survivors, missing and murdered indigenous women. All of that has to come to the surface. This has to be a priority for our nation if we want to move forward with true reconciliation and true fairness and true justice and true equality. We cannot just bury this under the rug and we can just not ignore this anymore, because we are in a time when all of those social values have to govern us, you know, before we do anything in business, in politics, wherever we want to go. We have to be right to ourselves before we have to be right for others. So I really believe that this country has come a long way. Don't get me wrong. You know, I believe that we have come a very long way in many ways. I've only been here for 5.5 years, and I've seen a lot of things start to change. You know, the way that people think about these issues are changing. You know, everyone started to talk a little bit more about, you know, the discomfort, you know, talking a little bit about these pieces in history. And Steve, when I even read about Canada in Discover Canada Guide, when I wanted to apply for Canadian citizenship, no one told you anything about that. No one tells you anything about residential schools. No one tells you about the thousands of Indigenous people that were killed. No one tells you about how people even got into residential schools, were forced to go there. And even the citizenship oath that I got, nothing mentioned Indigenous lands. Like, you know, the citizenship oath that I took last year, and it just changed recently. And that's the change that I'm talking about, which is very encouraging. And I'm really hopeful, and things are promising.
I think that you hit the nail on the head there. And I think I don't know how many Canadians that have been here for their whole lives would pass a Canadian citizenship test, to be honest with you. I don't know what the questions are that are on it, but I don't love my chances. But you're absolutely right. They don't, you know, the history is not taught. It's certainly not taught to new Canadians. It's not taught to older Canadians. And that has to change. And I think it is starting to change. So the last question I will ask before we bring on your featured guest would be, and again, this is a tough one, because, you know, Canada, in addition to our troubled history in residential schools, we have the problems that are occurring all around the world and in the United States. Islamophobia is on the rise as we speak in Canada, and there was a terrible situation not long ago in the town that I grew up in, London, Ontario, where an act of hate took out an entire family. When you see something like that, is your reaction anger? Is it disbelief? What do you think when you see that?
I believe that, you know, there is no country on earth that is perfect. And I know that we have a lot of work to do, a lot of, I think, emotions to process, even as the Muslim community in Canada was grieving. The 4 family members were just killed, murdered because of their faith. If you tell me that, you know, when I, in my very first few months in Canada, I would say, well, this is not here. You know, this does not happen here. This is not Canada that I wanted to continue my life in. And I wanted to have a kids and have a family here. But this is who we are as a country. You know, this is who the system allows some people to be. And Islamophobia and hatred does not start from nothing. It's all taught. This is all learned. No one was born to hate, and no one was born knowing how to hate. All of that is taught, whether by online hate speech, you know, if you go to the comment section on some of the news outlets, the major mainstream news outlets in Canada was allowing hate speech even to that some extent until the Quebec mosque attack happened after my very first year in Canada and just shook my entire family. They were scared to get out. They were scared to go to a mosque. They were scared to pray after the mosque attack in Quebec. And the same thing happened after the London attack when my family were asking me, well, are we safe to go for a walk today?
Right.
And that's the hardest question I've heard since I came here. And I said, yes, we are safe. I truly believe in Canada, and I truly believe in our Canadian brothers and sisters, you know, being there for us, protecting us. And that's why we are here in the first place. To the point about how did I feel, I think this belief comes to the surface. The first thing is, you know, being shocked and surprised that what motivated this action was the same thing that motivated the action that has killed a Toronto man at the mosque just a few months before, that has killed four people more, you know, in attacks across Ontario over the past few years, that killed many people who were praying peacefully in a mosque in Quebec. So I think hatred, bigotry, anxiety, fears of others, these are all things that they are taught, and it's time to unlearn them. Intolerance has to be unlearned as soon as possible, because, you know, if this fire does not recognize if you are a Muslim or not, if it starts with hate, it will get to everyone. And I'm really always, as you hear from my tone, I'm always hopeful, because I know that this country is doing a lot of work already. And I know that from the rallies that you saw after the attack, you know, across the country, I was in Halifax. I could even get close to 5 kilometers from the place of the rally because people were so crowded, supporting everyone and grieving with the Muslim community. This is my Canada. It's not the Canada of the hate and racism.
I'm glad you mentioned that. And I was happy to see the outpouring in London, especially in the community, and saying this is not what that community is. It's just heartbreaking that it exists at all. But you're absolutely right. It has to be taught, and it has to be untaught, unlearned, and aggressively so. All right, time for a quick coffee break, but not a coffee crisp break.
Hey, Steve.
Hey, Diana. How's it going?
Good talk. You know, every week we take a nugget from the interview and write a funny ad parody. But this week, I want to switch it up.
So you want to write a not funny ad parody?
No, I want to write an actual ad.
All right. But can you also make it funny?
Of course. You think I'm capable of ever not being funny?
Yeah. Okay. So what's the ad for?
Peace by Chocolate.
Ooh, nice one.
If you've been listening to this interview, which I assume you are because you're hearing me say this, then you'll know that Peace by Chocolate was started in Antigonish, Nova Scotia, after the Haddad family immigrated to Canada to escape the Syrian war. As a deliciously sweet love letter to their new home, Peace by Chocolate has a new Atlantic bar collection with some of their favorite sayings on the wrapper, like, "Where'd you at?" or "Fill your boots?" or my personal favorite, "Who's your fodder?"
Who's your fodder? That's funny.
Right? I told you this commercial would be funny whether I want it to be or not. So be sure to check out their website, peacebychocolate.ca, and remember their tagline, "One piece won't hurt." You know what else wouldn't hurt? A couple of free samples for Mama.
Okay, Diana, are you hoping that by doing an actual ad for Peace by Chocolate, they'll send you free chocolate?
Yeah.
Yeah, but Peace by Chocolate donates profits towards great charitable causes that build peace projects around the world.
And given how much I'm paid to do this podcast, I am a great charitable cause, Steve.
Now that's funny.
Yeah, not really.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank.
LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
And now, back to the sweet, sweet show.
We're going to switch gears and go to something called Quick Questions.
Quick Questions!
Tarek, are you ready for some quick questions?
Let's do it.
These are just for you. I would never ask these to anyone else. Okay. Putting you on the spot right here. What's your favorite Canadian meal?
My favorite Canadian meal?
Yeah.
I tried poutine once. Just once.
Yeah? Just once?
I liked it.
You did like it?
I didn't. Yeah, I tried it once in 5 years.
What about the Halifax Donair? I mean, I'm sure you've been ingratiated into the Donair kingdom.
Yeah. It's so great. And the Halifax Burger Week is my favorite. This is just super good.
Good to know. Let me ask you this question. Someone with medical training, why does an apple a day keep the doctor away? What is it about apples?
It does keep the doctor away. Who said it doesn't?
It does. It does. Why does an apple keep doctors away? Is it a phobia of apples? Is it something good in the apples?
No, absolutely. You know, I don't say apples, by the way, as a doctor. I say one chocolate bar a day keeps doctor away.
I like that expression better.
Unless it's a coffee crisp.
Yeah.
And then, then you're going to die slow, horrible death from diabetes.
Yeah, well, apple was just, you know, the spoiled fruit. You know, anything, if you eat healthy, you would keep the doctor away. Whatever you eat, just keep things healthy.
All right. I should have known better than think you would give a plug to apples. But a chocolate bar, a chocolate bar a day keeps the doctor away even better. Other than chocolate, what's the best way to make peace?
Acceptance. I think that we have to come together as human beings, accepting who we are, regardless of the things that differentiates us. I think people sometimes mistakenly take differences as a fuel to hatred and fear from others. I think we should celebrate them instead of just putting them as barriers between us as human beings. And in Canada, I think it's that societal friendship and harmony that starts with many ways, and it certainly starts with reconciliation. So chocolate is just, I call it a vehicle. It's our ambassadorship, right? And peace is that value that we have to take it everywhere, knock on every door, and try to talk to everyone. So after we finish a conversation about peace, we give people a chocolate bar.
I mean, that's a good way to close any conversation. That's such a great answer. What is the, and I've seen some interesting advice from your dad, including don't use the turn signal on the car because they don't have to know where we're going, which I think is great advice. What's the best advice you've ever received from your father?
My father is a hilarious guy, by the way. I just feel that he should be also talking a lot more than me these days. My father used to say that
we'll book him next.
Yeah. My father used to say that no one can go back and start a new beginning, but everyone can start today and make a new ending. And this whole thing really started with me when I was young. And then I heard he came to me once, you know, when I failed one of my assignments in school and I was so depressed. And this just keeps resonating with me every day. Since then, a lot has changed in my life because of my father, for sure. He's my first inspiration. He's my first and forever inspiration, but also he's a great father in many ways. Imagine having to protect your kids out of a horrible war and get them out and restart your lives after that many years. I wouldn't do it if I was his age. I wouldn't do it in many ways. I wouldn't have survived like he did for us.
Well, beautifully said, my friend. And let's end on this note. One final plug. What is the best thing that the world might not know about Annie Ganish?
I like that people know a lot about Annie Ganish with the Annie Ganish, the wheel, the pizza place. You know, they know a lot about Maybe SandFX, you know, Cody International Institute. Not too many people know about the Antigonish movement that, you know, that started in Antigonish and just has to spread out across the province, teaching people how to do coalitions and credit unions and collaboration between communities. It just started. Mm-hmm. It was like an amazing thing that has happened in Nova Scotia. And that's one of the things that has really made so many Canadian towns in Nova Scotia survive during hardships. It's just, you know, a new way of cooperation. So I really encourage everyone to go read about it.
I didn't know about that myself. That's great. Thank you. We're really learning something here. All right. Last two questions. Complete the statement, if you would, my friend. The Canadian star system is blank.
The Canadian star system is not a hoax.
That's good. I like that. That is a great answer. This whole show is based on the premise that it is, but I knew you'd be more optimistic than others. Now, let me ask you this. Living next door to the United States is like...
I wish we were not, to be honest. Because I would not have left to think about it, but living next door to the United States is an opportunity and a danger at the same time, to be honest. Mm. I'm really hopeful. I'm optimistic by nature, but also I am worried after what we saw in the past, like 5 to 6 years, what's going on in the US just makes me so scared. And the way that people just, you know, intolerate each other. It's so dangerous. And I'm so glad every time, you know, things were happening there during the previous president, I was always thankful. You would always go on my social media and the first thing you would say, I would say, thank God we are in Canada, you know, after the travel ban, the Muslim ban, after the crisis that had happened, you know, after the indignity that had really been brought to the highest office on the land. And it's really the most powerful office in the world. I think what we are lucky is that Canada kept true to our values, you know, by keeping the doors open, supporting even Americans wanted to come here. I truly believe that we are a great nation for keeping our values, regardless of who is governing the country, regardless of who's in the office of the prime minister or who's leading the country. I've read a lot about the history of the many amazing movements that happened in Canada during many different political parties' governance. And I think after what we have seen, what happened in the United States, we all have to rethink what do we need to do as a country. And also, I think the biggest opportunity is that because the United States is a great innovation hub, to be honest, we have to be frank that many of the amazing things we use every day was made there, was created and innovated there. And I just feel that we as a country, we can use that as an inspiration for us. We have all the talents, we have all the skills, and I think we have what it takes.
You really brought that answer around at the end. We're just going to go with an opportunity and a danger, but I appreciated all the rest of it. Tarik, thanks so much. You're staying with us. You're just going to introduce who you're bringing on today, but please stay with us. But would you please do us the honor of introducing the featured guest that you've brought with you today?
I brought with me my friend, my brother, Hussam Alloum. He's a great Syrian artist. Hussam is an amazing artist that I have never really seen anything like his work anywhere else on the entire planet. He has a big heart. He has an amazing family. He came to Canada only a few years ago. And I'm really honored to be on this even show with him. This is our first show together. I'm really honored because also Hussam did work with us over the past few months during the pandemic, drawing my father. He spent over 400 hours on a portrait for my dad holding a chocolate pear with peace in Arabic. So Hussam is absolutely an amazing guy, uses hyper-realism in his art, and I'm really honored to be with him today.
Yay!
Hussam, are you there?
Hello. Thank you for having me, and thank you, Tarik, for inviting me and introducing me like that.
Let's get right to it. Did you really spend 400 hours doing a portrait of Tarik's father?
Yeah, maybe more than that, maybe.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Why do you do this for so long, Hussam? It seems like a lot of time.
Actually, to create something special for a special story, you have to think a lot, actually, and make research and go back to the history of this family. You know, he's part from his culture, so I goes a lot to know more about Damascus and the history of Damascus and the art in Damascus in different way, you know, and to make or to create concept have all story and just one 2D piece of art, just oil painting. It's a lot of thinking and a lot of processing. This is makes me take a lot of time to create it. And especially the technique that I use it, it's the hyper-realistic. And you know, with the hyper-realistic, especially you make a lot of layers and use special brushes to have the tiny details, you know?
I'm sorry to interrupt. This is the first I've heard of the term hyper-realistic. So you look at a realist art and you go, that's awful. I can do it hyper-realistic. This is clearly not a real person. I would like to make it hyper-realistic. There's more, literally more layers involved. Is that true?
Yeah, in the hyper-realistic, you can say it's like contemporary art school. It started before just 3 or 40 years ago, and it's grow up with after the digital cameras start, the people use it. We use this, the hyper-realistic, it's a little bit different about the realistic, you know, because the realistic school in art, it's very, very old. And the hyper-realistic, it's something new because we give more time to the details to show up the quality of the human being to make something in hand could give you that quality. Maybe the camera doesn't.
Your story, similar to Tarek's in that you were from Syria, right?
Yeah.
Originally?
Yeah, I am from Syria.
And went to Jordan for a while, spent some time in Turkey. And during all that time, through your artwork, as it grew and grew and grew, I understand you started painting when you were about 4 years old, which my daughter has started too. I just don't know what it is. It's not hyper-realistic, I can tell you that. Through your artwork, you've very quickly identified causes that you wanted to be involved with, including eradicating gun violence against children with the war in Syria. And you quickly moved from just doing artwork to doing charitable work, doing volunteer work. Why? I mean, I think I know why it's so important to you, but how do you think art specifically can make a difference in bringing awareness and getting help for these causes?
This is maybe it's part from my story, because like an artist, when you find your country in this situation with the war and a lot of bad thing going, so it's not easy to have that feeling you cannot do anything. But right, like an artist, you could make something by your art. So I started to create some piece of art in the beginning in Syria, and it was very difficult because if you just show your opinion, it's put you in danger, you know, with that regime. So I left Syria to Jordan in 2013, and there I start my first project, making 13 piece of art. It was collage with oil painting. It's the message from this was talk about how the Syria, the general scene, everything mixed with guns and arms and this stuff, and how we don't use to be in this situation. You know, it was something very strange for us, because suddenly you find your country in this civil war and like bad dream, and we really try to wake up, you know. And I start make the art to explain the situation in that time. After that, I find different way to find myself like an artist. So I start work with kids in the camps, in the refugee camps in Jordan. And I worked like volunteers for 10 weeks full time. That was a very great experience for me, because this is could be different school or for my humanity, you know, because in the hard time, you have really to figure it out what you have choices to stay alive or to keep your mind, you know, because really sometimes you feel everything could make you crazy, you know.
It's pretty amazing to me in my little capacity of watching kids in art therapy. It's amazing to me the light that you can find in a dark situation by allowing kids to express themselves, even if what they're expressing is darkness, it's still giving them, it's changing their mindset or allowing them to express themselves. And the visual arts seem to do it like nothing else can. Music's great. Comedy's great. But the visual arts of being able to express, you know, whatever you want, however you can, and striving to get better at it at the same time is pretty amazing to me. Let's talk about you specifically, if we could, because you came over to Canada. What year did you come over, Wissam?
We landed here in 2018 in September.
So it's just been a few years. One of those years has been pretty much indoors in Canada, yeah, as it has all around the world. So lots of time to do art. But you came over with a couple hundred canvases that you were working on, immediately found the kindred spirit in a local artist in the Kingston area. And lo and behold, you're already nominated for a Kingston Award for your art, and you've taken on many of the local subjects in your work. And I know that I can see some of your work right behind you. I wish people could see it. You've particularly taken to using foils in your art. Can you explain why you use foils in your artwork?
Yeah, exactly. Unfortunately, when we arrived to Canada, as any newcomer, the language was the first challenge for us to connect with people. Really, it was a new experience for me to have friends in different ages. And, you know, as my friend Tarek mentioned, how the people, they welcoming us and very kind way. And I just want to explain my feeling about all the nice thing happening around me. I start this collection called Reflection. I use this tinfoil to talk about this concept because the reflection is that thing we could make it to anyone, because all the time we are a reflection of our doing to the people, you know. I try to explain how the people could change your life by their reflection. For example, the painting that I win in the Kingston Prize, the award. The painting, it's about my friend, her name Joyce. She's 85 years old. She was one of the volunteers. They supported us from the first day we landed here in Canada. And really, it was a new experience to have a friend in this age, because in Syria, it's impossible to have a friend in this age, you know. 85 years old, it's very limited number of people they could got to this age in Syria. And same time, really, they have different mind about us, the youth people, and about me, especially like an artist. So she make a huge difference in our life, because she was our eyes in this country, because she started just show us the nice places in the area, and she started tell us about many stories have related with Canada history. And as well, she is a photographer, and she has like 70,000 photos in her laptop. And when you sit with her, she can remember all the details for each photo, you know. And she just tell us amazing stories about her memories and stuff. She inspired me to make this collection, and I called it Reflections, and I used the tinfoil to talk about this concept. And I bought this, in this painting, I bought the tinfoil-like crown on her in her head, because really she is like a great reflection to our life just from her memory, you know?
I think that's amazing. I love the idea of it, that her memories are projecting outwards, and it's like a movie, a living movie that you're watching and taking these stories that she passes down and learning from them and passing them on now through this art and this medium. So I think it's a brilliant idea. Tarek, do you have any questions, by the way, for Wissam? Tarek is still here, and this is the longest I've ever seen him not talk, and I know it's bugging him. So Tarek, go ahead, ask Wissam a question.
Wissam, what is the thing that keeps you hopeful about the future
as an artist? What a better question. God, all right, that's enough from you. What is his question so much better than mine immediately?
He's great. Yeah. Actually, the making art, actually, and the hope to have a better future than our past, you know? Yeah, because as you know, Tarek, as a Syrian, we had a very different experience. And through this experience, all the time, we try to build the future from now in a very positive way. And we try just to keep the life as good as we hope.
Now, one piece of your work received a lot of acclaim, especially through social media, Hussam, is the Syrian Lisa. Can you talk a little bit about the Syrian Lisa, why you did that, and the kind of reaction that it's gotten?
In Syria, we had many actions, or we can say many bad memories have been in Syria. You know, in Aleppo in 2016, the Russian regime started bombing the city. And in that days, the Aleppo was trended in all social medias. And we just had photos in the social media about Aleppo. And there is one photo stopped me and makes me just look at it in a different way, because it was to a woman who had a hijab, and the dust covered all the details in her face. You just see that some blood come through her mouth. And I feel in that time, this is how the world system for me was like a real example about world system, because they hide everything. That's make me get angry more about the situation. Right. Yeah, and I was super sad, because you see the cities, they start destroy that history city, and that city have related with our culture, with our history, like Syrian, with our everything, you know. Aleppo, it's like Damascus. It's the second biggest city in Syria. And we, all of us, we love Aleppo. And to see what happened to the city, it's really broke our hearts. And that's make me make this painting and try to put all my feeling on it. And I created by one set. It's take me around 10 hours. And after I finish it, actually, I didn't had any plan to share it in social media. But my wife, she suggested to me, please post it, because at least this is your feeling. And when I posted, the people like it, and it's touched their soul, you know, because it was the real reflection of that period of time, you know. Yeah, this is makes it very popular.
So really, the popularity of it is because of your passion, your talent, and your wife. Your wife's idea to put it out. Your wife had the idea, put this out into the world, because people are going to like it. So shout out to your wife. And let's close on this, because this is a great story, that you met your wife in high school and you wooed her by presenting her with a portrait you did of her. Is that a true story?
Yeah, that's a true story.
Woo! That is taking a risk. Have you heard of Van Gogh? Because it can go one of two ways, Sam. Yeah. Come to think of it, I've only seen one of your ears throughout this interview. Turn your head. Do you have both ears?
Yeah, I have.
Yes. Okay, good. Okay. Woo! I really want to thank both of you for sharing your experiences with us, for being here in Canada. And, you know, I know you've been welcomed with open arms, but it's incredible to me how much you're spreading out your beauty and your art as well. Tarek, I know you can't really paint, but you're beautiful on the inside, my friend, and you're sharing your beauty.
Actually, I could paint. Yeah, the first few months in Canada, I went to course at SNFX and I started painting, and then my entire family were wowed. But I tried to gift one painting to a girl in university that I liked. It did not turn out the same way that Hussam did. I tried it.
It can go one of two ways. That's exactly what I'm saying. Yeah. But you've certainly found your passion, my friend, and thank you for spreading it. So thank you very much to both of you for being on the Canadian Star System today and being in the Canadian Star System and paying it forward.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And thank you again, Tarek, for inviting me. And I'm so glad to meet you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
That was really lovely.
That was so great.
The Canadian Star System is produced by Diana Francis and Steve Patterson in association with the Apostrophe Podcast Network. If you'd like more information on today's guests, please visit our website at canadianstarsystem.ca, where you can find links to their work and their socials. Speaking of socials, you can follow at Canadian Star Pod and at Apostrophe Pod on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And be sure to subscribe for free wherever you get your podcasts. Our editor and sound technician is Donovan Deschner of Fracture of Femur Productions. Music by Mark Camilleri of Imagine Sound Studios. Special thanks to Terry O'Reilly, Debbie O'Reilly, Callie O'Reilly, and Nancy Patterson, who is an honorary O'Reilly. And since you're doing such a good job of listening to the credits, there's a bonus clip for you after Steve sings us out.
So give it up for these good nerds, because our self-promotion sucks. And if they went away, we sure would miss them.
Steve.go!
The Canadian Star System.
I also would have accepted beer.
Piece by beer?
Piece by beer. Yeah. Oh, do you mind? Is that a copyright infringement if I open up piece by beer right beside piece by chocolate?
You know, the only thing is I don't drink because, you know, I am a Muslim. So yes. I do not drink, but go for it. That's great. You know, you can achieve peace with anything.
Some beer is non-alcoholic, though.
Let's get it.
Peace by liquor is not going to work. I'll tell you that.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.